Welcome to Rooting For You, a seasonal gardening podcast for non-experts. I'm Tess, and I know nothing.
And I'm Elise, and I know some things.
Each week, we'll chat about one gardening topic, and then discuss the effort-reward payoff by asking, is the juice worth the squeeze? Just a heads up, there might be a bit of swearing in this episode. You've been warned. So there are a heap of people out there who are the spring and summertime gardeners, and that is the time that they love, just getting out in the warm weather. So gardening in the winter months, going out into the cold, is probably a super foreign concept. And they're probably sitting there wondering, what on earth are people doing in their gardens in winter? So this is a bit of a mid-season check-in. And Elise, I know that you just had a busy weekend in your garden. So tell us, what have you been up to?
First, I'd like to say that I was wearing my thermals, my woolen socks, my beanie, my gloves, my whole kit and caboodle. I was kitted out. It was bloody freezing. But there is nothing that will keep me away from the garden.
You have also said before that your mum prefers winter gardening because she gets too hot and sweaty in summer.
It's true.
Sorry, Janine.
Hi, Mom. You know what I actually do like about it, though? You know when you're really cold in winter, the only way that I feel like I ever truly warm up is, like, getting the blood pumping. And I, frankly, don't exercise in a traditional – like, I don't go to the gym or go for a run or something. So my gardening is my exercise. So, like, the only time I feel warm is, like, shoveling. This is such a side discussion.
But there is that fabulous TED Talk from Sophie's Patch as well where she's talking about how – gardening is a form of exercise and, you know, save on the gym membership and just garden.
Oh my goodness. After stacking piles of wood in winter, like chopping, splitting, stacking piles of wood, I'm like, why does anyone pay for an F45 membership? Like, I'll pay you to do this for me. Seriously.
Okay. That's a bit of a tangent into winter gardening. But honestly, what have you been up to?
Well, so much stuff. I do think, though, there's a lot less to do in winter than any other month, but nonetheless, there is plenty. So let's just talk through some of it, shall we? The first thing that I did in the last week is mulch my garlic.
Mm-hmm.
Garlic we planted in autumn. We have a brilliant episode on that. But now in winter, the shooty uppies are up and we have to mulch them.
Mm.
So in that episode, we talked about how to get the biggest bulbs you need to keep mulching your garlic. And once the shooty uppies are tall enough that you can mulch around them without swallowing them or covering them completely, that's the time to do it, which for me is now.
And garlic, honestly, has been one of our most popular episodes. So that we know that you're out there, people who have put your garlic bulbs in. So this you is have. a timely reminder to go out and put some mulch on.
To give it a mulch. And you know what's really fun? Guess what I mulched it with?
I'm going to guess all of the, like, cleaned out your chicken coop and all of your pre-chicken cooped.
Well, usually that's what I did. But today, or not today, this week, I did it with autumn leaves.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah. So they make... I'm sure we mentioned this in the autumn leaves episode.
100%.
Yeah, they make a great mulch in garden beds. Mm. So I've still got plenty of those floating about, as you can imagine. So that's what went onto my garlic.
Fabulous.
Yeah. So get that done, guys, if you've got your garlic in. It's not like you got to do it today, right? But I just want you to do it at some point in the next month.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing I did was I went up to my Jerusalem artichokes. Remember our fartichokes? Now, the top of my Jerusalem artichokes have all died. They look terrible. And what we then do is we cut the tops off. Just lop them off.
Mm-hmm.
They're like 2 meters tall at this point.
Yep.
Cut them down. Get rid of them. Then in my garden bed, I have underneath the soil hundreds upon hundreds of Jerusalem artichokes just happily waiting for me to eat them.
Mm.
So I've cut down all the tops just because they look terrible, and then I'm just going to leave all the artichokes in the bed and just dig up, like, you know, a square 15 centimetres every time I need a feed.
Yeah, because they can just stay in the ground.
Literally all winter.
Yeah.
Yep. Now, I actually am so happy with my Jerusalem artichokes. I did nothing to them all winter, all summer, sorry. I didn't even water them. Like, I was so slack and I've just got so many there. So I actually want to set up another garden bed with Jerusalem artichokes, I've decided. I'm committing.
Okay.
This is a lot of Jerusalem artichokes. So because I've got so many in the garden bed, I don't need to go out and buy some. I can just dig them up and plant them, right? Because, you know, same with a potato, same with garlic, where just one will grow multiple.
Yep.
So I've got access to them. What I don't have access to is somewhere to plant them.
Mm.
Next job is I've got to set up another raised garden bed. So I went out and bought it. So I have the raised garden bed, but I haven't put it together. And what I was thinking about when I was planning this out over the weekend and looking at my space and thinking, where on earth can I fit another raised garden bed, is I thought, I also need to fill it, and I need to fill it before spring because I need to get my Jerusalem artichokes in there before spring. So then I thought I can do my old dump and run compost bed situation that we talked about a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. But if I do that, there's no way that is all going to compost down before spring, and I need to get my Jerusalem artichokes planted in winter.
Mm-hmm.
So this is why I have decided to do the hot composting.
Which in our episode with our discussion with Compostable Kate, you asked her the question of why would you do it? And one of the reasons is that you can do it so quickly. I mean, obviously, like hot composting is quick, so you can turn it around before exactly. spring is here.
Exactly. So when we did our hot composting episode, I said there is particular reason why, other than just my love of Cade, that I decided that, you know, this is the month for the hot composting, and this is actually why, because I want this bed filled with soil. I do not want to pay for it, and I want it done before spring.
Mm-hmm.
If you're listening to this and you've been inspired to grow Jerusalem artichokes, well, go back and listen to that episode, but also remember you got to plant them in winter.
So that will be coming. I mean, any time from now. Fabulous.
Yeah. Even early spring, you can do it.
Okay.
So I'm going to set up that garden bed. I'm going to fill it up with all my crap. I'm going to hot compost it down. Now, given that I need a meter cubed for this and my raised garden bed is not a meter high, what I'm going to do is put 4 stakes in the corner of it, wrap some chicken wire around it, and actually load it up quite high. And then as that compost down, it will compact in the same way you fill your compost bin. And then once it's all broken down, it's actually a lot smaller.
So you're doing your hot composting in your empty raised garden bed?
Yes.
Oh, that's cool.
Exactly. But with some chicken wire around it to make it higher. And then my thought is that in a month when it's all broken down and composted down, then I can take the chicken wire away. The raised garden bed will be full. I can whack my Jerusalem artichokes in there from my other patch and happy days.
If you nail this, I will be so super impressed.
It's almost like by saying it on the podcast, I now have to
You're held accountable.
I'm held accountable, yeah. That's what I'm going to be doing over the next couple of weeks.
Fabulous.
Another little thing which is nice to mention is that a listener, Yen, who's been listening to heaps of our episodes, she mentioned to us that this composting in situ to fill a raised garden bed actually has a name.
As much as I thought
I just made it up, I mean, it is a theory. Now, I'm not going to pronounce this right, but I'm going to give it a red hot crack. The Hugel Coulthart method.
Oh, that doesn't sound right at all.
Okay, it's spelled HUGELKULTER.
I mean, you got close enough. I'm not going to give it a shot.
I'm guessing it's maybe a German word. I don't know. Anyway, it has a
name. Could it be Scandinavian?
Could well be. Yeah, that too.
I mean, who would know?
Who would know? But anyway, if anyone wants to learn more about my dump and run filling a compost bed, the Hugel Coulthart method is what you need to Google. Yen, thank you very much for bringing that to our attention.
Okay, so you're ambitiously setting up your first proper crack at hot composting in your new raised garden bed, which I cannot wait to see how this goes.
I've got high expectations.
This is a lot that you're doing at the moment. What else?
Well, the other thing that's going on at the moment is my chicken coop is an absolute muddy quagmire, which is a real, real pain. And I think probably something that a lot of people with chickens struggle with. Some winters I find it's not a problem. And then other winters, including this one, it's just so bad. It's a real pain. And it's not healthy for the chickens to be splashing around in the mud.
Don't like wet feet.
So what I've done is I've got pellets, so shipping pellets.
Mm-hmm.
I get these through work, but let me tell you, anyone that has anything to do with a warehouse will literally pay you to take their pellets away because you get so many. And back in the day, people would sell them and that kind of thing, but there's just so many of them now that you'll get them free. In the really muddy spots in the garden, I put a pellet down.
Mm-hmm.
This is for two reasons. One, the chickens then aren't walking in the mud. I'm also not walking in the mud, and it gives the ground a chance to dry out.
Mm.
So it looks a little bit rough, but it does work. And probably every second winter, I get to the point where I do need to put pellets down. Now, if you don't have chickens, this you can still end up with quite muddy spots in your garden, especially like if you've got grow bags or pots. If they're getting particularly muddy, then you might also want to get a pellet and just raise up all your gardening bits and pieces. That can be a good way to kind of dry the earth off. And then once it comes to spring and things dry out again, I just get rid of the pellets.
Perfect.
So, look, probably not going to be used in your garden, Tess, but for people with bigger setups, if you've got a mud situation, whether it be in a chicken coop or anywhere, that is quite a handy little something.
Yeah.
The next thing I did on the weekend was prune my deciduous fruit trees.
Okay.
This is a hard job. We haven't done an episode on it because each tree needs a different kind of pruning approach. So yep. I have said before, do your deciduous fruit trees in winter. That is essential. You don't do your citrus in winter, but you mm-hmm. do everything else in winter, and you need to Google how to prune each one. Don't do it before the leaves have fallen off. You want the tree fully dormant, so now all the leaves are gone,
mm-hmm.
and I've given them all a snip. It doesn't take me very long now that I know what I'm doing, but for the first few years, trying to actually understand how to do it was a problem.
Yep.
And what you don't want to do is get all enthusiastic about growing, say, apples or nectarines, plant a tree, and then you're too scared to prune it.
Mm.
What then happens is the tree develops bad habits, bad shapes, problematic things for fruiting and for airflow, which can lead to funguses, but then the tree's too big for you to kind of remedy it.
Yep.
And I myself planted plenty of trees early on and didn't prune them. And now I'm trying to remedy them, and it is so much harder than if I'd just done it when they were young. So if you're planting deciduous fruit trees, these are ones that lose their leaves over winter. Figs, quinces, apples, pears, nectarines, apricots, cherries, prune them. Just do it.
Mm.
Commit. So I haven't done all my trees because I have too many to do in one foul swoop. But as long as I do them all before they start budding, which will be probably like last couple of weeks of winter,
mm-hmm.
that's fine. So it's just one of those things that we've got a couple of months just to do one or do some or whatever. It's not like today's the day to prune them all.
There's a window.
Yeah. The next thing I did on the weekend was I cut down all my asparagus.
Ooh.
So asparagus is a really fun crop. And Tess, you and I were saying earlier we should do an episode on it because it is something you plant in winter.
Mm.
But the reason we plant in winter is exactly the same as the reason we plant rhubarb in winter, in that it's a crown that's dormant.
Ah.
So it's very easy to handle it in winter. So because nothing is happening with my asparagus over winter, it's in its dormancy period. I cut all the plant matter back. It literally, there's nothing. You can see nothing mm-hmm. to the naked eye. Come spring, now that all the old foliage is gone, all the asparagus will shoot up.
Very nice.
So that maintenance job, if you've got asparagus in the garden now, you will do that maintenance job at some point in winter before they sprout up, the shooty uppies. If you don't have asparagus in the garden, we will do an episode over the coming weeks on how to plant that. But now's the time.
Fabulous. Can't wait.
Yeah. It's not a beginner crop. I'm going to say that. So if you're a super beginner, don't hang out for the asparagus. Another thing I haven't done yet, but it is haunting me, is pruning my berries.
Mm-hmm.
We did the episode on not pruning them in autumn and waiting till winter.
And now it's winter.
Now it is winter, and now I have to do it. I have quite a lot of cane berries. loganberries, blackberries, raspberries, tayberries. These are all pruned exactly the same way.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've got any of those, listen to the pruning raspberries episode and just apply the same theory to every berry that I just listed there.
Yep, all the cane berries. All the cane berries. Not your strawberries.
Not your strawberries, not your blueberries. Go listen to that. That is actually a bit of a prick of a job. I'm not looking forward to it.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to do it.
You got to.
Well, you really do, actually. And especially because they're in my chicken coop. I need to open that up. It'll be amazing, actually, how much more sunshine there is once I get all this forest of berries out. Anyway, I told you not to do it in autumn. I've told you to do it in winter. So if you haven't done it yet, get on that.
That's a big weekend. Anything else?
No, that was the big weekend, actually. I suppose another fun thing to discuss could be what I'm eating at the moment.
Ah, yeah.
From my garden specifically, from your garden, yes. Not in general. So things that I am harvesting at the moment, midwinter, lots of salad greens
mm-hmm.
of all varieties. I've got mustards, lettuces, rocket.
Mm-hmm.
You know what was really fun? This is such a side deviation, but I was pretty chuffed with it. I had a rocket patch in spring last year, maybe summer, and it all went to seed. And usually I pull it out before it goes to seed because I'm like, it's a waste of space, blah, blah, blah. But I didn't. I left it there. It went fully to seed. I then pulled it out and planted my Brussels sprouts there. Midsummer.
Oh, that's a really good reminder. If you're listening to this and you're in the Northern Hemisphere.
Yeah.
If you're tuning in out of interest, midsummer, get your Brussels sprouts
planted, guys. So I planted my Brussels sprouts where the rocket came out, which was actually quite a nice pairing. You know when we talk about like the timing, the pairings in the garden? But the rocket had clearly dropped an obscene amount of seed in this period. So now we're in the middle of winter. I've got my Brussels sprouts plants looking great. Again, just flexing, watch the video on Instagram. And around them, I've got all this rocket that's just come up. So I can harvest. I'm just like, I've got a massive salad patch that I didn't even intend to plant. I don't think it's doing the Brussels sprouts a disservice. Maybe it is, because you know how you don't want to crowd plants.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know. It looks fine to me.
What else are you eating?
Coriander. Parsley, lots of that. Silver beet and kale, of course, my winter garden staples. My broccoli, cabbages and Brussels sprouts aren't quite ready yet.
Yep.
So I'm expecting to eat them soon, but not yet. I'm still eating raspberries, amazingly.
Mm.
Not many, but I still have raspberries on the cane, which is just brings me so much joy. Autumn fruiting raspberries, guys. Go back and listen to the raspberries episode for more information on that. The other thing I'm still eating is rhubarb.
Yes, of course.
Well, actually, rhubarb isn't particularly a winter thing. Like we talked about in the rhubarb episode, often it dies down. But I think because I've planted the winter wonder variety that does well in winter, I can still be eating rhubarb.
I mean, of course, because you have 6 million rhubarb plants you're probably always eating it.
That's true. Always eating rhubarb. And of course, I've got eggs.
Yes.
Less eggs than what I have at any other time of year. Your chickens will slow down on the egg laying in winter. That's totally normal. So eggs, yes, but less of them. And then in my larder from my autumn harvest, I've still got potatoes, pumpkin and garlic.
Mm.
So they're also getting me through.
Now in our Brussels sprouts SOS troubleshooting episode, you promised us that you were going to eat some of the Brussels sprout leaves.
Oh, I did. I haven't done it yet.
Okay, so that's something you can eat next time.
Yeah, okay. Next time I'm down the patch, I'm collecting the Brussels sprout leaves. I will report back on those.
Yeah.
So that's Elise's quite large garden being kept very busy. Tess, in a much smaller suburban backyard, what is going on in your garden and specifically what are you eating at the moment?
So rocket aplenty.
Fabulous.
Parsley aplenty.
Excellent.
You know how much I love not buying herbs. Mm. I just think it's the best thing since sliced bread.
Yeah, if that's all you took from this podcast, like grow herbs.
I put my sprouting broccoli in the exact same spot that I put it last year. And it's not doing as well. And I'm going to say it's because I've got zero crop rotation there. So, you know, lesson learned for
did
me.
Did it do well last year in that spot?
Yeah.
Well, that bang on.
Bang on, yeah. The other thing I'm waiting patiently on is I put some beetroots in, but admittedly in a not full sun spot. So I'm not waiting with bated breath on that one.
The thing with root crops often, and I know we didn't have this experience with the old radishes last year, but root crops often, they're not that fussy. Like they can deal with a bit less sun. They can be in the ground a bit longer. They'll just be slower to grow. So it wouldn't surprise me if you just sit tight with the beetroots.
Okay.
Come spring, they will take off and you'll have a decent beetroot harvest.
Sure.
The only problem will be is that you're probably going
to pull them out to plant something else.
That's exactly what I was thinking. I mean, maybe it's a baby beetroot situation.
But if all I've got out of these cooler months is I'm eating rocket and herbs, I didn't even mention that I was eating chives as well. So if that's what I'm taking out of this season, then they're all great things.
Yeah, brilliant. And you're sprouting broccoli. It's not over yet.
It's not over yet. What would you recommend for you haven't crop rotated? How do you save that at this stage?
Give it a feed.
Give it a feed. Okay.
Give it a feed. Liquid feed, preferably.
Yep.
That, you know what? And given that sprouting broccoli, we've still got quite a bit of time for that. It doesn't have the kind of essential time requirement that Brussels sprouts do. I think there's a good chance you will save it.
They were also pretty much obliterated early on by caterpillars and came back from that. And that which is a really important thing to say. They came back from that. I didn't pull them out. So good.
Well, remember I said that in the episode. Like you think the plant's cactus, but actually they are amazingly resilient. So you know what the other thing will be is that there might not actually be a problem. They might just be behind the eight ball.
Yeah.
So where you think they should be, because the last years were at the same point, they've been set back, I don't know, 4, 6, 8 weeks because of all that damage. So they're going to be fine. They just need a bit longer.
Yeah.
Early spring, bit of warm weather. Wouldn't be surprised if they go brilliantly.
Fabulous. Oh, the other thing that I've got is oranges, which I inherited from.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah.
The citrus. Nice. Yeah. Actually, when I was walking to your house the other day, one of your neighbours has a crazy citrus tree. I can't remember if it was like mandarins or lemons or something. And I thought, yeah, and I thought that's really interesting. Obviously, that positioning, like you know, your location is brilliant for citrus because this tree was off chops. That's another good thing for people to remember. If you're walking down the street around where you live and someone is nailing something, then that's a good indicator that you can too. We will have to check back in end of winter, see how
many things that we have to check back in on.
I know, so many things to discuss.
Particularly the Brussels sprouts, the Brussels sprout leaves and how they eat.
Exactly. How Elise cooks the Brussels sprout leaves and how everything goes in Tess's garden.
Rooting For You is hosted by Elise and Tess. You can find us on Instagram @rootingforyoupod or email rootingforyou@elisealexandra.com.